the gospel will overcome. In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun, where darkness is veiled, the light of the sun. We know that the gospel overcomes.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day, each Friday and Saturday at 11:30 and each Sunday at noon. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
Got a new list of stories on The Dean's List today. What do you think, Christy?
I think that's exciting.
Yeah.
Except it's not really a new list. It's kind of the same list that we just didn't really get to because we just talked a lot.
Hey, you're revealing my secrets. But these are big stories from the week behind us.
They're still on the list for the week.
Absolutely.
We could have a weekly list.
We could, a weekly list. That's what we got here. We got to two last time. Will we get to two, three, four, five this time? Don't know, but we're going to try to get to more than one. We'll put it that way.
Awesome.
All right, first item on the list from the New American. Parents, beware. Big Brother, now I'm reading. Big Brother's coming for your kids. Buried deep inside the mammoth bipartisan so-called education legislation approved last month. So this is the real deal now. Education legislation, it's dubbed the Every Student Succeeds Act, or ESSA, E-S-S-A. Every Student Succeeds. You heard this?
No.
Okay.
It sounds intriguing.
Well.
But it sounds good. But
does
I have a feeling
to me,
it's going to be bad.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's one of those things where they give it a clever title so that you think, oh, I really do want my student to succeed.
Yes.
And then you think, oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, but if it's from
but
the government,
really,
we all know what.
It's
really bad.
It's probably not good.
What was it Ronald Reagan said, the most feared words in the English language? I'm from the government and I'm here to help, something like that.
I don't know who said that.
Reagan said it.
Oh.
I just want to make sure I got the quote right. But, the Every Student Succeeds Act, it's a radical expansion of what the statute refers to as, listen to this, full-service community schools.
Full-service.
Full-service community schools.
As opposed to
normal public schools or government schools is what I like to call them.
Okay, so more.
More government intrusion, interaction, involvement. The word you choose says a lot about your understanding of government school. But anyway, these full-service community schools, obviously they are controversial institutions, but they are more accurately described as, by some, parental replacement centers.
Oh.
Now, that's not the government's term.
But that's people who are probably opposed to it.
Well, of course, yeah. Parental replacement centers. What they want to do is oversee, according to those who are against, oversee every aspect of your child's life, ranging from their, now all of this is in the legislation, ranging from their mental health, their well-being, their nutrition, their dentistry, on and on it goes. And even parents are in the crosshairs because the Obama administration defines parents as, now listen to this, the Obama administration defines parents as equal partners with the government in child rearing. So now we're partners with the government.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a Daggett wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Watch the Olympics.
Figure skating.
No, it's gymnastics.
Oh, gymnastics?
Yeah.
I thought it was figure skating.
No, Daggett's gymnast.
My bad.
Or gymnast.
My bad.
Yeah. He's a good movie. He's like, wow. Anyway, I don't watch too much figure skating. Sorry. I don't even watch gymnastics for the most part.
Okay.
I do watch the swimming and the basketball and the track. Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's
and
awesome.
In the winter, I like that speed skating, man.
Oh, yeah.
What's that guy?
Apollo Ohno.
Apollo Ohno.
He's getting a little old now.
I know, but he's still the man.
Yeah.
Okay. We got to move on, though.
All right. So government,
yes.
Parental replacement centers, not the actual government word.
Exactly.
But.
And look, there are a number of unconstitutional provisions in the bill that essentially aim to turn government schools into parents and parents into pariahs. Now, that's language from the article. Now, we're just going to talk about this. Go ahead.
What are we, like China or something over here? What are we?
Wow. Man, now you're talking bad about China.
I'm sorry.
What are you, Trump? No, I'm kidding. But, you know, this is a problem. Increasingly, the state claims ownership of our children. This isn't the first time this has happened. And it goes back to a discussion that we've had so many times this broadcast. Is the state good or bad?
Well, bad.
Yeah. In a word, you see, a lot of Christians think it's good. And it's for our, and it's to promote good things in the culture. That's how they define the word good and say Romans 13. That's not what it means in Romans 13.
Listen to our other broadcast.
Well, that's right. That's right. You know, there's one thing I said on that broadcast that didn't come across that clearly. I don't know if I should deal with it now or another time. Maybe another time. We'll see if we have time. But generally, when I think about public school, when I think about government education, I think of two things. Number one, is it? Now, listen, don't ask. This is not opinion. Biblically speaking, see, you got to look through a New Covenant lens. Biblically speaking, is it the role of government to educate kids?
No.
No. I mean, the Bible doesn't say that the government's supposed to educate kids. You're
the
supposed
Bible
to educate your own kids.
Educate their children.
That's right.
All of the time.
Now, does that mean it's always sin to get someone else to help out with their education? Well, no, I'm not saying that.
Right.
But it's just simply not the role of the government to do that. See, and now what you're doing is you're taxing people, you're taking money from us by force to pay for the education of all these kids. It's just wrong. It's just not a biblical dynamic. And so I get very frustrated with Christians who defend it, you know, in that regard. Now, I understand working parents and, you know, they're up against it. They don't necessarily believe they have alternatives. I get the emotion, I get the circumstances, but I'm talking at a philosophical level, and if we'd all come to embrace reality, biblical reality at a philosophical level, maybe we could do something different. I came up with an idea the other day, and I won't really get into it on the broadcast today, but I came up with an alternative education plan that would help Christian parents educate their children practically for free, and it wouldn't involve government education or homeschooling.
Interesting.
And it was an awesome plan, and I pitched it to my wife, and she's not like a, you know, a sycophant or anything like that. She's not going to just say it's an awesome plan just because I'm her husband. She'll tell me if it's really bad. She said it's a good plan except for one thing. Government won't let you get away with it because of all the rules and regulations.
Right.
But I'm still going to look into
it. All right. I'm waiting for it.
But the second thing I think, you know, when the government educates, it's not merely education, it's indoctrination. Because there's no such thing as neutrality, philosophically speaking. In other words, everyone comes from a worldview. So you put your kids in school, you know, there's going to be a worldview behind what's being taught. And it's certainly not a biblical worldview. Now, how long could we talk about that?
We could talk about that forever.
So I just, you know, here's yet another reason for Christians to get their kids out.
This is going to make for lazy parenting.
Yeah, well, that too, yeah.
If I can just send my kid to this this place and they can get their nutrition, their dental stuff, I don't have to worry about anything. I can live
right.
my life.
That's right. Now, am I saying Christian teachers shouldn't be in public school? No, Christian teachers ought to be there. But at the same time, we ought to understand there's not a whole lot we can do. You can't disobey the government, number one, and you can't really reform it. You can't teach Christianity in the public school. You know why? There's two reasons. You know why? Number one, government won't let you.
Right.
But let's say that the government did. Well, number two, it wouldn't be right. See, because now you're forcing, through the government, religion on a lot of people who aren't Christians, and that's not a Christian value. Do we want to persuade people to come to Christ? Do we want to teach the gospel? Sure, but not through government coercion.
We want to teach it through
so
persuasion.
I know this shocks my, you know, friends and family members. Now, all my family members know now. My friends know now. But once upon a time, I don't want, you know, Christianity taught in public schools. In fact, I'm very particular about who teaches my children the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's certain Christian groups I don't want teaching my kids the Bible.
Right.
Anyway, so I could say a lot more, but I won't. We got to move on.
All
we're
right,
trying to
we're
get multiple stories
there's
here.
The story.
Next issue, Sarah Palin, Donald Trump. Everybody's talking about this, so I had to bring it up. And that's 3 or 4 days old, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting. Got an article here from W. James Antle III.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. I'm just going to call him James from now on.
Because okay.
I, you know, Antle, I'll forget that.
Okay.
W. James Antle III. Posting out of theweek.com. Here's the title. No, Sarah Palin did not betray the Tea Party by endorsing Donald Trump. Now, we alluded to this on the last broadcast,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to expand a little bit.
Excellent. I'm ready.
Yeah. As I said before, the conservatives are livid that
mm-hmm.
Sarah Palin would support Donald Trump. She sold
yep.
us out, sold us down the river. But listen to this. This is James Antle.
The third. With a W before
with
the James.
With a W before the James. Some of those dismayed at Trump's success have dedicated their lives to spreading conservatism. Principled conservatism,
mm-hmm.
okay? Sarah Rumpf said, Sarah Palin just threw away years of goodwill as a principled conservative.
Huh.
Others claimed to not recognize Palin, the Tea Party, or even conservatism itself anymore. And these were just the self-described conservatives, not to mention their libertarian allies.
Mm.
Glad to hear somebody else say libertarians are basically conservative. We get accused of being liberal a lot. But anyway, but here's the deal. Listen to this. Now, this is good analysis, and this is what we're going to talk about. But the Tea Party was always paradoxically a mixture of libertarianism
mm-hmm.
and red state identity politics.
Mm.
And we're going to talk about identity politics in another context a little bit later. If we get time.
We will.
Yeah. And on the one hand, I do think the Tea Party's been hijacked. But, you know, at another level, it's always been a mixture of libertarianism and red state identity mm-hmm. politics. It's always partly about fighting the left and partly about fighting bipartisan big government. It's always one part, Hayek's Road to Serfdom. You ought to read that, by the way. And another part, your uncle's chain emails about Obama's long-form birth certificate. As such, now listen to this. Palin was always more of a populist than a small government gal, even as she tried, along with the broader conservative movement, to harmonize these two Tea Party tendencies. So is Sarah Palin a conservative?
I don't know.
Or is she wearing a disguise with her glasses? We'll talk about it after the break. Okay.
If mom and dad are not in agreement, it discredits mom, it discredits dad, but it also discredits the God they claim to serve. And so their son or daughter is going to go looking for truth outside.
The question of unity. Another of the top questions parents ask and will answer. I'm Rich Rosl. Join Trace Embry and me next time on License to Parent.
License to Parent every Monday at 11 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9.
If you're over 50 and concerned about any of the following, stay tuned for an exclusive free bottle offer. Are you concerned about your heart health? Are you interested in healthy brain function? What about joint comfort? Well, if you answered yes to any of these questions, we want to send you a free bottle of Krill Omega 50 Plus. Krill Omega 50 Plus combines krill oil with ultra pure fish oil in one tiny pill, and it promotes your joint health, your heart health, your arteries, brain function, and even your eye health. Best of all, you can get a free bottle of Krill Omega 50 Plus today. Just pay for shipping and we'll send you a free bottle. Experience the miracle of Krill Omega 50 Plus. Call now for your
your free bottle. 1-800-340-5763. That's 1-800-340-5763. 1-800-340-5763. Again, call now. 1-800-340-5763.
It was my choice, his choice, their choice, our choice. I felt I had no other choice. Afterward, there was only sorrow and regret. I felt there was no hope. Where could I turn? Who would understand? Then I heard there was a safe place where I could share my grief, guilt, pain, and find recovery. Call Abortion Recovery Assistance of Piedmont Women's Center at 864-244-1434. It is confidential, loving, and supportive.
Listen for a life-changing message for you and someone you know. We're Christian Talk 660. Tell a friend.
All right, it's Sarah Palin in disguise with glasses, huh? Now, I'm not necessarily criticizing Sarah Palin.
Right.
I mean, politically, policy-wise, it'd be easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my point. I'm making a point about her endorsement of Trump. I mean, she didn't have to sell anybody out. She didn't have to change her position in order to do that, is the point that James Antle is making, and it's the point that I'm making. Now, normally I don't read a whole lot, but let me just read a little bit more from Antle. I mean, he says it better than I. Even before the Tea Party. See, there's nothing new. Now, this is what I wanted to point out, because a lot of people, I actually heard a couple of people talking about this. Very interesting this week. I decided to talk about this on the broadcast. Then I heard a couple of other people talking about it. I was like, whoa, wow. Not necessarily this article, but this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them said, you know, this has been a problem for, you know, a few years now. Well, we read another article in the previous broadcast about some advice that was given to Pat Buchanan back in 1996. That's 20 years ago. But this has been going on a lot longer than that. A lot longer than that. Say, what do you mean?
What do you mean?
Thank you. Even before the Tea Party, modern American conservatism has largely been about convincing. Now, listen, this is so good.
Okay, I'm listening.
It's largely been about convincing people with normally patriotic instincts and traditional values that their political champions are advocates of relatively limited government.
Okay.
In other words, you got these people, like we said before, They just know what they want. They don't really have any policy principles, you know, to a large measure, to a large degree. So what they want, and so the politicians promise them what they want. That's populism,
mm-hmm.
as well as nationalism,
mm-hmm.
in the case of Trump, for example. Okay? But the other thing that the politicians do is trying to convince all these people with these, you know, this patriotism and quote-unquote traditional values that they are the ones who can best give them what they need, and they are the ones who are championing something that's good for them, quote-unquote, which is limited government. Anyway, I don't have time to break that down too much more. But think about it this way, and I'm going back to the piece, back to the article. That's why millions of people who voted for tax-cutting, deregulating Ronald Reagan had previously voted for wage and price-freezing Richard Nixon.
Mm.
You see how those things are
mm-hmm.
opposite?
Mm-hmm.
One's tax-cutting, deregulating. One's
yep.
wage and price freezing, government intervention. But listen, you know how I know that's true? Because I voted for Reagan, and if I was old enough at the time, I would have voted for Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
As before we knew, he was a jerk face.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that respectfully.
He
did do some good things,
right.
But he's a liar, and he's a, you know, a cheat
yeah,
and all
yeah,
the
yeah,
rest.
Yeah.
He's a crook.
Yeah.
But what politician isn't, right?
Right.
But you know who the Reagan people and the Nixon people voted for before that? Well, they voted for segregating states' rights statist George Wallace.
Mm.
And I remember people doing that. I was very, very young, you know, during those days.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes on to say, Antle goes on to say, this isn't even unique to conservatism. For most people, politics is about personality, identity, and group loyalties.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's more like rooting for a sports team, you know, than supporting a particular, you know, ideology or policy, as I've been saying.
Right. And that was what I was mentioning in one of the other broadcasts, was my frustration or, I don't know, bewilderment at the debate, because
yes.
it seemed like it was a sporting event, not an actual adult, mature conversation.
That's right. That's right. And so we've said many, many times, too, the conservatives love big government just like the liberals love big government. They just love big government to do for them.
Right.
That's identity politics. The reason people are voting for Trump is because they feel left out. They feel pushed aside. And they feel like, okay, as a group, middle class, hardworking Americans, Trump's their guy.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's going to get it done for me. They're not libertarian.
Well, isn't that what they said about Obama?
Oh, sure.
He's going to get this done for me.
Sure.
Hope and change and whatever.
Sure. And, of course, that's what we mean by identity politics, right? The homosexual group, the Hispanics, the African Americans, the middle class, you know, the evangelicals. I mean, it's all identity
politics.
That's right.
Contest.
That's right. So is this an indictment on the Republican Party, you know, Sarah Palin and what's happening and Donald Trump and all the rest, or is it an indictment on the American people?
I would say an indictment on the American people.
That's right. That's right. Maybe both, but certainly the American people.
We don't know what we want.
Well, we know what we want, and we're willing to throw everybody else overboard to get it.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know there's some people who don't know what they want. I know. I mean, it sounds confusing, but,
right.
You know, they just want, you know, good stuff for them. They want the government to give them the goodies.
Or we're easily swayed by what the politicians tell us.
Yeah, true. And that's why strict democracy is problematic, you know, with the majority rule. Well, we should do a whole broadcast on that because that's sacrosanct, you know, especially in Baptist churches. Majority rule, you know what we're talking about? Majority rule?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, majority rule gets you in trouble sometimes. Dictatorship will get you in trouble, too, okay, again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, more importantly, here's the question. Is this an indictment on the church?
Potentially.
Well, I mean, where are evangelicals running?
Republican.
Well, they're running to the candidate they think is going to do the best for them, whether it's Donald Trump.
Or Ted Cruz. Before that, Sarah Palin.
Or Sarah Palin, yeah. I'm not saying every evangelical. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that think. And obviously those who listen to talk radio are a lot more informed than maybe a lot of other folk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big generalization, I know. But I'm just saying, we got a big problem. And, you know, I think most evangelicals, they don't realize it, but they vote for those populist candidates, those nationalistic candidates. And it is identity politics in a very real sense, which leads me to another issue. Is this the second or third issue on today's Dean's?
I think it's the third,
believe it or not.
Yes.
All right. Identity politics. Now, not last time, but on a previous broadcast, it's like two or three broadcasts ago, don't even remember, we got into a discussion on multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
We even talked about microaggressions.
Right.
And I was, you know, stumbling and bumbling and fumbling all over the place. I couldn't get out what I wanted to get out, so much so you were questioning, what are you talking about?
I thought multiculturalism was a good thing.
Ah, well, okay. Now, there is a sense in which multiculturalism is a good thing. What is that sense in your mind?
Everyone working together and not being racist or discriminatory. By that I mean loving all people.
Yes, that's just
not the world's version of what's discrimination.
Yeah, well, sure,
that's another
sure. And see, that's biblical,
story.
Respecting all people. You know, freedom of religion, freedom in general, pluralistic society.
Or the fact that the church is made up of different people groups and everyone works together. It's multifaceted.
Sure. They all come together in Christ. But even in civil society, Christians should glory in a pluralistic society in the sense that we allow everybody to be free.
Yes.
And believe what they want to believe and pursue what they want to pursue while we do what? Persuade them to come to Christ.
Right.
We know they're wrong if they don't know Jesus, but we persuade, we don't force.
Right.
Now, that's far cry different than, say, pluralism, which says that you have to believe that every single worldview is equally valid. Every single truth claim is equally valid. See, and if you don't adhere to that, then you are anathema, and that's where our culture is. So that's why people get confused when I say we glory in a pluralistic culture. We don't glory in pluralism philosophically, but we glory in a pluralistic culture because that means we glory in a free culture because we can't coerce anybody. We don't want anybody to coerce us.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, that brings me to the bad kind of multiculturalism, which is what I was trying to get through the other day. Multiculturalism certainly respects the different cultures that people come from. And let's just say people come from 50 different cultures in a particular place in America. If they want to hold on to some of their, you know, cultural values and cultural dress and all, that's fine. That's great. I don't have a problem with that. And we're not going to discriminate, right?
Mm-hmm.
But multiculturalism is distinguished from that philosophically. It's that whole issue of not just pluralistic society, but pluralism philosophically. Mm. It's the notion that all cultures are equal and must be seen as equal. Take, for example, here we are in America. It's been influenced by Christianity ever since our existence. Let's say, you know, we get 1 million Muslims that come in at the same time, just like what's happening in Germany. All right, and all of a sudden, you know, they want to set up Sharia law in certain parts of the country. Is that a good thing?
No.
No, it's not. Because you're going to, you know, you're going to kill wives, you know, for committing adultery, for example. Well, we can't allow that.
Mm.
And so, no offense, but Islam and Sharia law and Islamic culture is inferior to a culture that's influenced by Christianity. Now, that sounds bigoted. It sounds racist.
Sounds elitist.
But see, it's not. See, because what we're dealing with is objective truth, revelation. I don't think we're better people. We're sinners. We're not racist.
But why is Sharia law a wrong form of law? It's because it goes against God's philosophy, God's law.
That's right. Well, and God's law in the sense, thou shalt not kill, and I'm not just quoting the Ten Commandments. The reality is there is no such thing as neutrality, and so that's why these discussions are a little bit difficult when we want to talk about limited government versus legislating Christianity and all of that. And that's why we talk sometimes, okay, well, is government even legit?
Mm.
Okay, and I think you make a biblical argument that it's not, even though it's ordained by God. How's that? I mean, what I mean by that, Satan's not legit. I mean, he's ordained by God, but I'm not going to follow Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Satan's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say, for the sake of argument, government's legit. The question is, biblically speaking, now that we're under the new covenant, what should government in a civil society be? Well, it basically should protect our freedom, period,
right.
End of story. It shouldn't do all kind of other stuff, because everything the government does except protect your freedom is anti-freedom, and that's
right.
Not Bible.
Right.
That's not New Testament. Now, we don't have time to hash that out today, but this is the point. Nothing is neutral. So in that sense, sure, as a Christian, we got to have a Christian worldview behind the government. Not that we're going to impose all our values, but we're not going to let you impede on anyone else's liberty. And if you allow Sharia law, for example, to exist, you don't have freedom and liberty. You have mayhem and murder. That's what you have.
And you have to let your worldview, the Christian worldview, influence your concept of culture, not postmodernism, not what sounds good, but what does the Bible say and what does God say?
That is exactly right. So what I want to do the next time we get together, I want to continue this a little bit, along with some other stories, but I want to talk about what I tried to say the other day with reference to microaggressions. Because there's some aggressions that are just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some that aren't even aggressions, though they are called such.
Yep.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. A lot to talk about on the Dean's List. We'll do it again. Join us.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archive broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. Join us each week at 11:30 on Friday and Saturday, and noon on Sunday for The Dean's List.
And the gospel.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.